Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 19th of November 2024. My name's Simon, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Margaret Simpson and Diane Sider, and read by Hazel Hobbs and Ralph Weirs. We shall also hear a poem, John Keats's To Autumn, introduced and read by Jenny. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to OxTalk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access OxTalk online.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
Hundreds of veterans serving personnel and members of the public have marked Remembrance Sunday in Oxford. Led by a piper, military units, councillors, community groups and organisations marked up St Giles and gathered before the War Memorial, where they were welcomed by City Rector Reverend Anthony Buckley and the Lord Mayor of Oxford, Mike Rowley. Representatives from Oxford City Council, Oxfordshire County Council, Thames Valley Police, Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service, Help for Heroes and Oxford's Twin Cities attended the service. Messages of remembrance were spoken by Oxford's faith leader, Mark Simon of the Oxford Jewish Community, Jawed Malik JP of Muslim Community, Neil Mukherjee of the Hindu Community and Penny Jacques of Oxford Humanists. Piper Scott Weston played the Lament Flowers of the Forest before the last post and a 2-minute silence was observed. A new creation from Wanted Nitsy, an unknown crafter who decorates the Oxfordshire town with impressive wool projects, has appeared for Remembrance Day. The knitted decoration is sat on top of Mill Street Postbox, which has been the site of many of the anonymous crafter's designs. This time, the theme is based around Remembrance Day, with a soldier and a horse knitted in dark green, surrounded by a ring of red poppies. Previous projects made and installed by Nitsy have included hands holding up a planet for Earth Day, an upside-down ice cream cone in the summer, and a floral display in the spring.
Oxford University Press, OUP, has released the shortlist for its annual Word of the Year, which includes a reference to the scramble for Oasis gig tickets in an August frenzy. The words were chosen to reflect some of the moods and conversations that have shaped 2024 and compiled by OUP's experts following analysis of its 25 billion word body of language data. The public chose Goblin Mode as their winner in 2022 and Riz in 2023. The competing six words and expressions have seen a notable spike in usage and gained new prominence in 2024. The shortlist, now open to public vote, is as follows. Law, a noun, a body of supposed facts, background information and anecdotes relating to someone or something regarded as knowledge required for full understanding or informed discussion of the subject in question. Brain rot, a noun, supposed deterioration of a person's mental or intellectual state, especially viewed as the result of overconsumption of material, now particularly online content, considered to be trivial or unchallenging. Also, something characterized as likely to lead to such deterioration. Dynamic pricing, noun, the practice of varying the price for a product or service to reflect changing market conditions, in particular, the charging of a higher price at a time of greater demand. Demure, adjective, of a person, reserved or restrained in appearance or behaviour. Of clothing, not showy, ostentatious or overly revealing. Slop, noun, art, writing or other content generated using artificial intelligence, shared and distributed online in an indiscriminate or intrusive way and characterized as being of low quality, inauthentic or inaccurate. Romantasy, noun, a genre of fiction combining elements of romantic fiction and fantasy, typically featuring themes of magic, the supernatural or adventure alongside a central romantic storyline. Caspar Grathwall, president of Oxford Languages, said, "Since 2004, we've aimed to provide a window into language and cultural change through the Oxford Word of the Year. The 2024 shortlist represents a snapshot of the topics that have caught our interest and imagination and kept us talking. Capturing themes from finances to fantasy, what is particularly unique about this year's selection is the range of words associated with bygone eras that have slid back into public consciousness. In some cases, after being adopted and retooled by online communities." Voting is open on the OUP.com website and closes on Thursday, November the 28th. OUP will conduct a last detailed analysis, considering data, votes and public commentary on the finalists, before naming the definitive Word of the Year for 2024 on December the 2nd. From Podcast US and Sudoku UK in 2005, to Selfie, 2013 and 15, and Climate Emergency, 2019, Word of the Year highlights the language that has reflected the cultural shifts, patterns and sentiments of a particular year.
An approach to dealing with bullying, which does not involve blame and punishment, reduces incidence in primary school, a study involving Oxford University has found. The year-long trial of the Finnish KAYU Mistä Vastaan or Kiva program, which translates to Against Bullying, involved more than 11,000 pupils from more than 100 primary schools in England and Wales. The study found the program significantly reduced incidence of bullying, with the schools that implemented it reporting a 13% decrease in bullying compared to schools using standard procedures. They also reported children were more empathetic towards victims and children's problems with their peers were reduced. The study, the largest of its kind in the UK, also showed the programme's effectiveness across all socio-economically diverse schools, from small rural schools to large urban schools. Of the 118 schools involved, half adopted the Kiva programme, while the other half continued standard practice. The schools that adopted Kiva set up fortnightly lessons for pupils focused on recognising and responding to bullying and helping to support victims. There were also whole school assemblies on bullying, poster campaigns and information for parents, while teachers supervising break times wore high visibility vests. Rather than the traditional response of blame and punishment for the bully, the schools had discussions with the children involved and made sure the bullying pupil committed to actions to support the victim. Lucy Bowes, Professor of Psychopathology at the University of Oxford's Department of Experimental Psychology, said, "Being bullied may have devastating consequences for children and young people, including increasing the risk of mental health difficulties, such as anxiety or depression, as well as poor school outcomes. This means that any improvement is worthwhile, and even small percentage changes can have a substantial impact for those individual children and will cumulatively improve the situation in the school over time." The project was led by Bangor University in conjunction with the universities of Exeter, Oxford, Warwick and Birmingham. The trial was managed by the Centre for Trials Research, Cardiff University, while the Children's Early Intervention Trust charity organised intervention costs, school training and implementation. Professor Judy Hutchins from the Centre for Evidence-Based Early Intervention at Bangor University said, "Bullying in childhood is one of the biggest risk factors for later mental health problems in childhood, adolescence and beyond. While all schools are required to have a bullying policy, it's rarely evidence-based. The Kiva whole school approach has had a really significant effect on bullying in other countries because it focuses on everyone's behaviour and removes the social rewards usually gained by the perpetrators." An Oxfordshire charity has said there is still work to be done following the announcement of a new mental health bill. The bill was read out in Parliament this week and is set to overhaul the outdated Mental Health Act 1983. The Mental Health Act 1983, MHA, is the main piece of legislation that covers the assessment, treatment and rights of people with a mental health disorder. This Act provides a legal framework to authorise the detention and compulsory treatment of people who have a mental health disorder and are considered at risk of harm to themselves or others. However, an independent review conducted by Professor Sir Simon Wesley in 2018 identified that the current MHA is out of step with a modern-day mental health service and is in significant need of reform. Oxfordshire Mind told the Oxford Mail it welcomes the government's introduction of the new bill as a significant step towards a more progressive and supportive mental health system. "This announcement holds substantial promise for the 50,000 people who face detainment under mental health legislation each year, moving us closer to compassionate and dignified care," said a spokesperson for Oxfordshire Mind. "For people in Oxfordshire, this bill means the prospect of better access to care that aligns more closely with their individual needs, especially during times of crisis. The removal of police and prison cells as places of safety is crucial. We know that people experiencing mental health crises benefit most from support in environments designed for their well-being rather than settings that can feel punitive or distressing. Currently, individuals experience several severe mental illness that can be placed in police cells, and the law automatically gives a patient's nearest relative, rather than the person of their choosing, such as a partner, a say in decisions about their care. Additionally, black people are over three times more likely to be detained under the Act, while those with a learning disability and autistic people are also found to be inappropriately sectioned. The government says the new mental health bill will give patients sectioned under the Mental Health Act more dignity and say over their care, and will address the significant changes in attitudes towards mental illness. However, Oxfordshire Mind added that there is still work to be done. Systemic issues like racial disparities in how mental health laws are applied remain a significant concern, both nationally and locally, said a spokesperson for the branch. Addressing these inequalities will be essential if we were to achieve the equitable system that Oxfordshire residents deserve. Whether it's over a beer with your mates, a couple with a friend, a shared dog walk, in the stands at a football match, or something more structured, talking is good for us, writes Oxford United Supporters Panel Chair Janine Bailey. Social connections are embedded in human society throughout the world and across all time periods. We are made to connect with others. Introvert or extrovert, some degree of communication is part of who we are. Less than 5 years ago, the entire nation and much of the world experienced enforced isolation from friends, family, and in most cases from work colleagues too, as we endured extensive periods of lockdown and social distancing during the COVID pandemic. Studies have shown mental health got worse in people of all ages over this time, not simply due to the stress of the situation, but also because of the lack of social interaction. One good thing to emerge from that time is growing awareness of the importance of looking after our mental health as well as our physical health. The loss of members of our football community to suicide has brought this into sharp focus. Of course, mental health, like physical health, covers a spectrum. It's not only those with severe illness who benefit from a trip to the GP, and it's not only the suicidal who benefit from looking after their mental health. Oxford United, in partnership with Oxford Mind and the Joey Beacham Foundation, is hosting what promises to be the largest football club-led mental health workshop at the Kasam Stadium this evening. This builds on the Can We Talk campaign, which has already seen the launch of a powerful video featuring Will Volks and Luke Beacham, Joey's brother. Will and Luke will be joined by Des Buckingham this evening for a panel conversation, and Oxfordshire Mind will facilitate further discussion. Harnessing the power of football for the local community in this way is just one way football can make a difference. There are people in our fan base for whom simply attending a match is the only social interaction they have, and this supports their mental well-being even when we lose the game. Free mental health support is available through Oxfordshire Mind, with 24-hour and 365 days a year help available nationwide through Samaritans. To speak with Oxfordshire Mind, contact 01865 247788. To speak with Samaritans, contact 116123. To learn more about the Joey Beacham Foundation, please contact info@joeybeacham.org. A Bicester School sixth form student rediscovered her love of learning earlier this year following a summer internship at a pharmaceutical company. Maya Ash was one of 15 students in the Oxfordshire area to be selected for a paid internship throughout August at Vertex, based at Milton Park near Didcot. She now has her sights set on studying chemistry at university. The company hosted the students at its purpose-built learning lab in an attempt to improve diversity in the science sector. head of their Oxford Learning Lab, Robert Zibtins, said the internships were targeted at people underrepresented in the scientific community, and teachers in local schools helped identify students who would make the most of the opportunities. Ms. Ash said, "The learning lab was basically like being in school, but applying everything you learn straight away. You were paired with Vertex employer and each day had a different focus. For example, I sampled my own DNA and then using gel electrophoresis, it told me if I was a morning person or a night person. I'm a night person." She said she had a tough time as a pupil when younger. "I don't know what happened, but something switched and it is like my passion now. I love the formulas and the challenge." Alison Rosier, careers lead at the school, encouraged Maya to apply for the Vertex internship. "When I received the email from Vertex asking for nominations of students from underrepresented backgrounds in STEM, I immediately thought about Maya," said Miss Rosier. "She didn't always feel motivated about the future and her self-belief was often low. I encouraged her to apply, and when she was invited for interview, she was excited but nervous. But we supported her, and the real excitement came when she was offered a place on the programme several weeks later. I cried my eyes out when I got the email saying I'd got in," said Miss Ash. "The experience was such a turning point for me. I went to Vertex, and it's completely brought my love back for learning. And I remembered why I was here, and why I wanted to be at school, and why I retook. And so that's what I'm doing. It affected me a lot." Small business owners say the County Council are shockingly out of touch with their needs and have signed a petition asking for a small business champion. More than 100 local businesses in Oxford have signed the petition, which calls for the council to listen to their needs more and to address their concerns about the council's low-traffic neighbourhood LTNs scheme and other traffic measures. It also urges the authority to appoint a small business champion to give them a voice in the council. Some small business owners have said that they feel their perspectives have been overlooked, but the council say that none of their policies are designed to inhibit their growth. Linda Elms, owner of Hot Diggity Dog, a mobile dog walking business in East Oxford, presented the petition at the Oxfordshire County Council meeting on Tuesday, November the 5th. In her speech to councillors, she said, "At the moment, none of us feel seen or heard by the council. We're feeling let down and ignored. Unless we're lucky enough to have a supportive councillor where our business is based, which is very rare, we have no voice." Commenting before the council meeting, Jenny Wells, a mobile hairdresser, said, "The council didn't come to us to ask for our opinions about their transport restrictions, even though they're causing complete chaos and making mobile traders like me drive hundreds of miles further a year unnecessarily. We feel completely overlooked. The council is shockingly out of touch with the way we live our lives." Bernadette Evans, a spokesperson for Oxford Business Action Group, said, "Many business owners in Oxford, especially SME, small and medium-sized enterprise, business owners with a shopfront and mobile businesses, are concerned about the impact that Oxfordshire County Council's policies are having on them, causing them a great deal of anxiety. Every one of the 100-plus business owners who signed the petition did so enthusiastically and in the hope that doing so would prompt a change in attitude to them from the County Council." Conservative councillor Eddie Reeves, leader of the opposition, submitted a written question asking if the leader of the council, Liz Leffman, would appoint a small business champion. Ms. Leffman's written response stated that the council would consider appointing a small business champion after they had reviewed the structure of OxLEP, Oxfordshire Local Enterprise Partnership. When approached for comment, she said, "It is in everybody's interest for small businesses to succeed for the good of our local economy. None of our policies are designed to inhibit their growth. Indeed, by seeking to tackle the well-known congestion problems, we are trying to help everyone."
French baker Paul is once again busy with customers after reopening in Oxford High Street. The patisserie in the High Street close to Carfax, which sells French bread, cakes, pastries and coffee, shut suddenly in Oxford. There were no signs to indicate the closure was not permanent, but then a sign was placed in the window to say Paul will be reopening soon. The notice said, "Guess what? We're reopening soon. We look forward to serving you your French favourites again." The patisserie has now reopened and is once again busy with customers. A member of staff said, "We reopened a few weeks ago. Everything is going well." The chain of bakery cafe restaurants is found in 47 countries, with a head office in Lille, France. There used to be a Paul concession stand in the Westgate Centre, but it closed years ago. The chain specialises in serving breads, crepes, sandwiches, macarons, soups, cakes, pastries, coffee, wine and beer. Paul is a family company, currently owned by Group Holder, which also owned the patisserie La Dorée from 2002 to 2021. In 2022, there were more than 750 Paul Café restaurants, with 424 in France and more than 300 in 46 other countries. Paul opened in Oxford High Street 10 years ago, in 2014. Its first shop in the UK outside London. It has a 5-star food hygiene rating, the top rating, following an inspection in June. Chief Executive of Paul UK, Jean-Michel Aurieux, said at the time, "Oxford is the ideal location for our first bakery outside of London, as we believe it has a wonderful balance of cultural heritage, a well-established local community, and vibrant economic and tourism activity, which can clearly embrace the growth of our business." The cafe has a 3.5 out of 5 rating on review site TripAdvisor. One visitor in August was disappointed, saying, "The whole dining experience was poor, and we got the impression that the staff were fed up and wanted to go home." But others have posted more positive reviews. One customer listed as Rolf said, following a visit in October last year, "Great coffee and food, but above all, always service with a smile. Great location, right in the centre of town." Ryan, also listed as a customer last year, added, "Started my day off with a delicious caramel latte. One gentleman was so kind and very well-mannered, explaining the different drinks options available to me. In the moment, I felt like more of a friend as opposed to a customer. There was such a variety of different food options available and elegantly displayed, and I was advised on which ones are both customer and staff favourites, which was very helpful. I went for the raspberry delice, which was delicious."
A long-standing Thai restaurant is being forced to relocate due to Oxford University's major development plans in the West End of the city. Bangkok House has been an Oxford staple in Hythe Bridge Street since 1992 at its attractive location in the city centre. However, it will soon be moved to the other side of the road after the university had plans permitted for the Beaver House building to be demolished and used for new modern offices. This also means that the Chinese supermarket and Paddyfield restaurant will have to relocate. The university's plans are known as Bridge Labs, and they accelerate the major changes planned for the west end of the city, which includes plans for the multi-million pound Oxpens project, in which new apartments, student rooms, a new hotel and an amphitheatre would be built. It comes as Attic in Park End Street is also being closed down and redeveloped into a ground floor music venue bar and cafe with new office space upstairs as part of the regeneration of the area, with development advisors Elwood Fund Management preparing plans for the site. Bangkok House, which closed at its last location at the end of September, will be moving into the unit previously occupied by Sojo, which was a casualty of the lockdown in 2020. Wantana Vongzatsal, co-owner of Bangkok House, said she hoped the new iteration of the restaurant would be open before Christmas. She said, "Oxford University needs to develop that side of the road in Hythe Bridge Street. They gave us a notice a while ago, but we don't know when they're going to start developing in that area." Around 6 months after they gave us the first notice, they said they wanted to get the restaurant back for the new development and that we needed to find somewhere else. "We had been at our previous location for 32 years. We were a little bit sad. We are like a symbol of Oxford being in the city for a long, long time. We tried to negotiate, but we had no option." The university advised that we could keep the front part of the building, but that wasn't enough. We need the kitchen part as well. So in the end, we needed to move. Mrs. Vongerschool added, "The new location opposite is owned by the university as well, but a different college. We're looking forward to opening again. We are in the process of doing a list with the university, but it's taking a long time to get it done. We would like to open before Christmas, but I'm not sure the list will be done by then because we have to renovate inside." An Oxford shop with the Westgate Shopping Centre, which was given consecutive zero food hygiene ratings, was found to be selling expired milk. Globe News, a news agent on Castle Street, was initially inspected by Oxford City Council's environmental health team on August the 9th, 2023. The business was told that urgent improvement was necessary as it was handed a shocking 0 out of 5 food hygiene rating. With almost a year having passed, the shop was once again visited by Oxford City Council's environmental health team, this time on Tuesday, July the 30th this year. Once again, the business was handed the bottom score of 0, with the team told that urgent improvement was still necessary. The Oxford Mail has now obtained a copy of the full report from that inspection following a Freedom of Information request. One major issue outlined was the failure to store food and drink at the correct temperatures inside the premises. Milk was being stored in a display chiller showing over 20 degrees, and this milk had gone off, read the report. "You must ensure food is kept at the correct temperature or removed from sale after 4 hours, as it is an offence to display food for sale that is not fit for human consumption. At the time of my inspection, the baguettes had been stored in the freezer for some time, were still soft to touch, so once again, you must ensure that you store food at the correct temperature." There were also structural and storage issues at Globe News, which outlined a pest risk to the inspector. "Stock was being stored directly on the floor," added the report. "Stock should not be stored on the floor to allow for checking for pests and cleaning. Do not store stock directly on the floor at any time." The grill and oven had been repaired with tape. This is not a suitable repair method. Staff hygiene was another key issue observed by the inspector on the day, who witnessed several malpractices during the visit and a cross-contamination risk. "During the course of my inspection, the staff handled open food, but I did not see them wash their hand," continued the report. "To maintain an adequate standard of hygiene and avoid cross-contamination, regular hand washing is very important, and particularly before handling food, after handling refuse, after coughing or sneezing, and when first entering the food handling area. The member of staff stated he washed his hands in the big sink and not the provided hand wash basin. Ensure staff are aware of the correct sink to use for hand washing. The Oxford Mail has attempted to approach Globe News for comment.
An Oxfordshire hotel, headed by a celebrity chef, has been named as one of the UK's best. Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons is nestled in the countryside by the village of Great Milton, and earlier this year retained its two Michelin stars, which the restaurant has held since 1984. Started by Raymond Blanc in the very same year, the kitchen has been a starting point for several notable chefs, including Marco Pierre White, whose steakhouse bar and grill is in Oxford's Leonardo Royal Hotel. Already celebrating its 40th anniversary, Le Manoir has now marked the occasion further by winning the Good Hotels Guide's César Award. For 40 years, Raymond Blanc has held two Michelin stars at this beautiful country house hotel, and it's not surprising, as every mouthful of every meal is a triumph, reads the guide. Yet it's not just the food which is outstanding in this 15th century manor house, with its honey-coloured stone and lavender-lined pathways giving it a quintessentially English feel, but with huge dollops of French style and savoir-faire. Everything about the Manoir, with its cookery and gardening schools, is a personal enterprise for Monsieur Blanc, whose inspiration for the bedrooms came from his travels. Downstairs in the sitting rooms, it feels relaxed rather than stuffy, and in the conservatory dining room, you can now order a la carte as well as an 8-course tasting menu extravaganza. The guide adds, much of the fresh produce comes from the kitchen gardens. There is also an expansive orchard and Japanese garden, all dotted with sculpture. It's expensive, but so worth it.
A nursery in Banbury celebrating its 35-year anniversary will be hosting a ball this month to raise money for a local charity. Banbury School Day Nursery, which is located on the grounds of Wickham Park Academy, will host the charity ball at Whatley Hall Hotel on Saturday, November the 23rd. The ball will raise money for Footprints Baby Loss, a bereavement charity that provides vital support to parents and families who experience the death of one or more of their twins or triplets before, during or after birth. Manager and owner of the nursery, Andrea Brooker, said, "I can't believe that the nursery is still going strong after all these years and that I still enjoy being at the nursery after so many years. Starting as a young adult to now having four adult children and being a nana. The children are the best part of my working day, especially when they say, 'Andrea, you're the boss, aren't you?'" Sharon Dark started Footprints Baby Loss with Susie Schofield in January 2024. Ms. Dark said, "Susie and I started the charity following our own personal experience of losing our twin boys. My twin boys, Charlie and Joshua, were born 25 years ago and lived 7 and 13 days. Susie's twins, Rory and Daniel, both died 12 years ago. We met each other when I was Susie's befriender. Andrea first got in touch with us just after we launched in January 2024 to see how she could help. The nursery then kindly raised some money for us by having a cake sale at their sports day in June. When Andrea mentioned the ball, we were thrilled. It's a first for us at Footprints. We are really looking forward to it. We've both worked in the baby loss sector as volunteers and as employees for many years and know how important it is finding peer-to-peer support. We understand the value of having a safe space to be able to communicate with someone who has been through something similar and provide a kind, caring and inclusive approach with our bereavement services. Everyone who experiences the death of a twin, triplet or more, is welcome to access our support whatever gestation or age of baby loss and at any point during the grief journey, whether it is in the early days or many years later. The charity provides bereavement support in the form of befriending, online support groups and an online community private group. The support is all provided by those who have had first-hand experience of twin or triplet loss. Ms. Dark added, "As a new charity, we are currently running entirely on donations, so we are grateful for people like Andrea fundraising for us. The money raised makes so much difference to the families that we support." Oxford City Councillor Chu Mung Kong joined Radio Oxford presenters at Ferry Leisure Centre as part of the BBC's 1,000-mile challenge for children in need. The event not only supported the charity, but also highlighted the council's commitment to ensuring every child in Oxford has the opportunity to swim. All Oxford residents aged 16 or under can enjoy free swimming at the council's four swimming pools across the city: Barton Leisure Centre, Ferry Leisure Centre, Lees Pools and Leisure Centre Hinksey Pool. The sessions are now available at a wider set of times throughout the week, making it easier for young people to stay active and develop their swimming skills. Mr. Mung Kong, Cabinet Member for a Healthy Oxford, said, "Learning to swim is essential, not only for enjoyment, but also for safety and health. With two major rivers, the canal, lakes and many smaller waterways, we want to make sure all young people feel safe and confident around water." Families can find details on swimming session times at oxford.gov.uk/free swim.
A cat rescuer has received support from the community after rescuing abandoned kittens in Wantage and being faced with hundreds of pounds in costs. Kaylee Watts, who lives in a village near Lambourne, Berkshire, was getting her own cat vaccinated at the vets in Oxfordshire when someone came in with five abandoned kittens. The woman who found them said they were huddled next to a pile of cat biscuit in a field near Lark Hill Track. Long-term animal lover Mrs. Watts, who has her own kitten, three cats and a dog, decided to take the animals in. She contacted a Basingstoke-based rescue charity that she had worked with in the past, who asked Mrs. Watts to look after the kittens for a week while they found them a permanent home. In the meantime, she had to get them an SNAP test, a £160 test which checks for feline diseases, as well as treat the kittens for conjunctivitis, ear infections and cat flu. Mrs. Watts said the kittens were doing much better now. After she fronted the medical expenses, the charity said it would not be able to help, and Mrs. Watts would have to take full responsibility for the kittens. "We decided we still would take the cats in, because we've got to, but it means we have to pay for vets' bills, food and litter," she said. "I was working with this charity for 2 years and was fostering for them. I always did my best, so I feel like I've been stabbed in the back." Friends suggested Mrs. Watts set up a Just Giving page to help with the costs, and after a post on Facebook in a Wantage community group, her target of £100 was beaten sixfold, with a total of £600 having now been raised. Commenters also offered donations of cat food, beds, litter and more to help with the rescuer, with others recommending charities and some even wanting to adopt them. She said, "Having all this support, even just the kind messages, means so much. It's just amazing, and I'm so grateful there are some nice people out there who do care as well." Mrs. Watts said the kittens are doing better now they've received treatment, and she's waiting to find the right home to adopt them. The Just Giving page is still open to donations, www.justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Kaylee, that's K-A-E-L-I-E, -Watts, W-A-T-T-S. S. Mrs. Watts added, "The charities do want to help, but they're limited on the space they have. People can help by rescuing cats, not buying them, getting them checked and neutered, and being more responsible pet owners."
From Memory Lane, Olive Gibbs was a larger-than-life character who served Oxford with great distinction for many years. Born in 1918, she became well known as a city councillor, offering valuable service to the community. She was also highly regarded nationally as a peace campaigner and founder member of CND, Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. Now her immense contribution to the city and nation has been recorded in a 50-minute film entitled Olive Gibbs, A Remarkable Woman. It has already attracted capacity audiences at the Ultimate Picture Palace in East Oxford and is now to be shown at St Barnabas Church in Jericho on Saturday, November the 30th. The film is by Helen Shepherd and Christopher Baines, who thought of the idea when they visited an exhibition by photographer Helen Muspratt at the Western Library in Oxford. They write, "We were particularly struck by a 1941 black and white portrait of Olive Gibbs. Knowing nothing about her, we became fascinated by Olive's story and decided to make a documentary about her life. With the help of historian Liz Woolley, we were introduced to Olive's two sons, Simon and Andrew, who spoke to us about their mother and generously lent us photographs, press cuttings, correspondence, and even home movies for the film. We interviewed family members, former colleagues, historians, and local residents, and shot the film on location in Oxford and Lee-on-Solent, where Olive's family took regular holidays. We came to admire Olive as a brave and exceptional person whose story still seems very relevant today. She is remembered for her outspoken passion, lively sense of humour, and spirited dedication to improving the lives of ordinary people." Historian Miss Woolley adds, "Olive believed passionately in educational opportunities for people of all talents and abilities and was an energetic chair of the College of Further Education as it was then. Olive, as she was always known, only in official circles would she be called Miss Gibbs, died aged 77 in 1995 after serving on both the city and county councils. Her many campaigns included the battle to stop Inner Relief Road being built across Christchurch Meadow in Oxford and support for the demolition of the infamous Cuslow walls separating council and private homes on the North Oxford estate. The City of Oxford College in Oxpens Road hosted a display of her life in 2018 to mark the centenary of her birth. She lived with her husband Edmund, a leading Oxford accountant, in Iffley Road, but her heart was always in the area of the city she represented it as a councillor, West Oxford. The filmmakers are well established in the industry. Helen Shepherd is a BAFTA award-winning freelance director who works for the BBC and many independent production companies, while Christopher Baines is a professional filmmaker and photographer. For tickets for the film show at St Barnabas Church, starting at 7 p.m, go to https://olive-gibbs-film.eventbrite.com. The chairwoman of an Oxford Cycle campaign group is set to step down this month. Cyclox's Dr. Alison Hill will leave the post on November the 19th and will be succeeded by Ian Loder. Dr. Hill received an MBE in this year's New Year's Honours List for her services to cycling. A public health doctor in her earlier career, Dr. Hill has had a long-standing passion for cycling. Her journey advocating for cycling and cyclists began in 2005 with Cycling England an independent body funded by the Department of Transport, before moving on to Cyclocks in 2008. Cyclocks campaigns to put cycling at the heart of Oxford's future and aims to get more people cycling more often and more safely in and around Oxford. A statement from Mr. Loader on the Cyclocks website says, "I feel honoured and privileged to be chosen as the new chair of Cyclocks. I'm also a little daunted. Alison Hill has led the organisation with commitment, tenacity and skill for many years. She leaves the post with Cyclocks in good health and with big shoes to fill. But mainly, I am excited about taking on this role. I'm passionately committed to Cyclocks' values and goals and look forward to working with the trustees and our members to take them forward."
Now that we are into late autumn and heading into winter, I'd like to share a poem with you written by John Keats, and it's entitled "To Autumn." Season of mists and mellow fruitfulness, close bosom friend of the maturing sun, conspiring with him how to load and bless with fruit the vines that round the thatch eaves run, to bend with apples the mossed cottage trees and fill all fruit with ripeness to the core, to swell the gourd and plump the hazel shells with a sweet kernel, to set budding more and still more later flowers for the bees, until they think warm days will never cease, for summer has o'erbrimmed their clammy cells. Who hath not seen thee oft amid thy store? Sometimes whoever seeks abroad may find thee sitting careless on a granary floor, thy hair soft lifted by the winnowing wind, or on a half-reaped furrow, sound asleep, drowsed with the fume of poppies, while they hook spares the next swath and all its twined flowers. And sometimes, like a gleaner, thou dost keep steady thy laden head across a brook, or by a cider press, with patient look, thou watchest the last oozing hours by hours. Where are the songs of spring? Aye, where are they? Think not of them, thou hast thy music too, while borrowed clouds bloom the soft dying day and touch the stubble plains with rosy hue. Then in a wailful choir the small gnats mourn along the river sallows, borne aloft of sinking as the light wind lives or dies. And full-grown lambs loud bleat from hilly bourn, hedge crickets sing, and now with treble soft the redbreast whistles from a garden croft, and gathering swallows twitter in the skies.
More than half of the taxi drivers stopped during a day's enforcement operation were not compliant with their licence conditions, according to a local authority. The enforcement operation took place on Saturday, September the 28th, across South Oxfordshire and the Vale of Wight Horse, in partnership with Thames Valley Police. Licensed vehicles were stopped and inspected to see if they complied with the licence conditions set out by the local authority, along with checks on the vehicle's roadworthiness. During the four-hour operation, 34 vehicles were stopped. A total of 18 of these were registered with South Oxfordshire District Council, 13 with Vale of Wight Horse District Council, and 3 with Oxford City Council. Of those, 19 were non-compliant, with issues such as drivers not wearing their badge, roof signs not connected, and fare charts not displayed. A total of 156 penalty points were issued to drivers on their council-issued licences as a result. Some of the licences will now be reviewed due to an excessive number of points accumulated. Police also took action against 5 vehicles and issued fixed penalty notices. Georgina Heritage, South Oxfordshire District Council Cabinet Member for Communities, said, "Taxis are a vital part of our transport system, particularly for those where public transport is difficult to access or those with disabilities. Passengers deserve to be able to ride in safe, comfortable and properly insured vehicles. These enforcement operations allow us to ensure licensed vehicles in our district do not put passengers at risk."
Nearly 40 households on a key Oxford Road want a recently redesigned bus lane changed back to the way it was, claiming it is causing gridlock, pollution, delay and increased risk of serious harm. As part of changes to prioritise cyclists and pedestrians on Woodstock Road, the direction of the bus lane between Wolvercote Roundabout and Squitchy Lane has been switched from southbound to northbound. It means that instead of leading into the city, it now leaves the city. Oxfordshire County Council said the measures were agreed with bus operators to improve journey times for buses travelling northbound. But 37 households, the majority of people living in the experiment zone between Woodstock Road and Squitchy Lane, have signed the letter to Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Transport Management, Andrew Gunt, demanding the measures are reversed. The letter said, "This ill-conceived scheme, opposed locally from the start, has been utterly disastrous for both our road and adjacent streets. North Oxford simply cannot function properly when such a critical arterial road is prevented from operating optimally and is instead engineered to cause quite artificial gridlock, pollution, delay and increased risk of serious harm," it said. It added that the only potential benefit was slightly faster northbound bus journeys for approximately 700 yards. Woodstock Road resident Matt Broadway told us, "It's absolute chaos. Everything southbound now has to queue behind all the buses." Less anticipated is a huge increase in congestion northbound because where traffic used to filter into different directions on the approach to the roundabout, now it is all in one lane. "We see primary age children, some cycling themselves or on various contraptions like Dutch bikes, now in the main traffic flow, which is incredibly dangerous." He added, "Oxfordshire County Council refused to say what will be in the measure of success or how they will judge whether the trial should be made permanent or not. I want the County Council to see the level of support. What's really annoying is that Andrew Gant has had that letter since October 16 and hasn't even had the courtesy to respond." Oxfordshire County Council said the trial would take time to bed in and all the measures on Woodstock Road are being closely monitored. A spokesman said, "However, since the bus lane has been in operation, there have been other traffic management measures in place as we provide improved side road junctions and other roadworks associated with utility companies. A six-month consultation is open at Let's Talk Oxfordshire." A woman has shared the story of her mother using a service that provides physician-assisted suicide, describing it as incredibly difficult ahead of a House of Commons bill vote. Katie of Didcot, whose surname has not been revealed, said Mother Alison was diagnosed with motor neurone disease, MND, in June 2022. Alison informed her family in the September that she wanted to go to Dignitas, a non-profit organisation in Switzerland, as she did not want to see the disease through to the end. Laws in the UK prevent people from asking for medical help to die, but in Switzerland it is legal. A bill put forward by Spen Valley MP Kim Ledbetter later this month would give notice at the end of life for the terminally ill. A debate and first vote are expected to take place on November the 29th. Katie said, 3 years ago, my mum was diagnosed with motor neuron disease, and she made it very clear from the outset that she did not want to see it through to the end due to how difficult the disease is. So she made the choice to go to Dignitas. Unfortunately, my sister and I could not go with her, so we had to say goodbye early in the morning at 6 a.m. We put her in a taxi to go to the airport, and then we had to learn that Mum had died from a text saying she sleeps so brave. And we were still living with the trauma and the pain of the fact that we couldn't be there with her. It's a really positive move forward to give people who are terminally ill the chance to not die in pain. Mum's dying wish would have been that anybody can access a painless death with dignity, just like she did, but in the UK. So family and everyone can be there just as we wanted to. I'm deeply involved in the Dignity in Dying campaign and have given speeches in Parliament and been part of Ken Lebrita's launching of her new bill. If the bill passes the first stage in the Commons, it will go to committee stage where MPs can table amendments before facing further scrutiny and votes in both the House of Commons and the House of Lords, meaning any change in the law would not be agreed until next year at the earliest. Opponents have raised concerns, including the possibility of people being put under pressure to end their lives. Campaign group Care Not Kill said the government should focus on improving palliative care instead.
A package of cost of living support measures is set to be agreed upon by Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet. The measures, proposed for agreement on Tuesday, November the 19th, include funding for low-income pensioners who have lost their winter fuel allowance and the continued provision of free school meals during holidays to children and young people already receiving them. It comes after the government announced the extension of the Household Support Fund from October the 1st this year to March the 31st, 2025. Councillor Nathan Lay, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Public Health, Inequalities and Community Safety, said, "Inflation has fallen significantly since its high of over 11% in 2022. However, this does not reflect the real situation people face every day, particularly those on lower incomes. Many people are still struggling with everyday costs and are having to cut back on basics such as food and heating. And sadly, this has a very real impact on people's physical and mental health. This is why it's so important that we continue to provide vital support to households that need it the most. The programme will also see city and district councils receive additional funding for locally targeted support, while the Resident Support Scheme will continue to assist those experiencing financial crises with basic household costs. Residents can find out more about the support available by visiting Oxfordshire County Council's dedicated webpage."
The gap between the employment rates of those with disabilities and the wider population in Oxfordshire has shrunk. It comes as new figures show almost half of disabled people across Britain remain out of work. The charity Disability Rights UK called for a total rethink of the benefits system, which it says demonises rather than supports disabled people seeking work. Figures from the Department of Work and Pensions shows there were 78,458 disabled people living in Oxfordshire as of March, with 73% of them in employment. Among people with disabilities, the employment rate was 86%, meaning the disability employment gap was 13 percentage points. The year before, this was 22 points. Nationally, there were over 9.8 million disabled people in Great Britain, with 55% of them in employment. This has increased from 44% a decade ago, but has stagnated over the last 5 years. In Oxfordshire, the disability employment rate has increased by 21% since last year. James Taylor, Executive Director of Strategy at Disability Equality Charity Scope, called the lack of progress unacceptable. The disability employment gap has barely shifted in a decade, he said. Huge numbers of disabled people want to work but are denied the opportunity because of barriers like employers' negative attitudes and inflexible working practices. Punitive measures like cutting benefits and increasing conditionality don't help disabled people get into work. What we need is investment in localised, tailored, flexible employment support for disabled people. Ken Butler from charity Disability Rights UK said disabled people are excluded from employment by barriers to adequate housing, social care and health care. He added, for the government to want to make progress on closing the disability employment gap, it must start by changing the approach to social security from punitive to supportive. There is no evidence that benefit sanctions work for disabled people. There is plenty of evidence about the negative impact they have. To reduce the disability employment gap, Mr. Butler said the government must tackle all system barriers and not force disabled people into unsafe, unsustainable and often exploitative work. Sir Stephen Timms MP, Minister for Social Security and Disability, said, there's more to do to ensure disabled people have equal opportunity in the workplace, with too much talent going to waste because people have been denied the help they need. That's why our Get Britain Working Plan will include new work, health, and skills plans, so people get the joined up health and employment support they need to get back into work and stay in work.
A city centre post office could be one of 115 directly owned branches to close. Post office chairman Nigel Railton made the announcement on Wednesday, November the 13th, saying the decision to close branches across the country came as the group looks to boost postmaster pay by £250 million over 5 years. The post office revealed it is looking to offload 115 directly owned branches within its 11,500 network. This could see these branches transferred to retail partners or postmasters or potentially closed. One on the list was the branch in St Aldate's in Oxford city centre. Around 1,000 workers are employed across the 115 post office branches that are at risk of closing. These positions are now all under threat. Hundreds of further roles are also under threat at post office headquarters as it looks to streamline back office operations. Mr Roten said the shake-up will also offer a new deal for postmasters by increasing their share of revenue and giving them a greater say in the running of the business as it looks to move on from the Horizon IT scandal. The plans, which are subject to government funding, would see average branch pay doubled by 2030, with £120 million in additional pay by the end of the first year. Mr Redwin said, the post office has a 360-year history of public service, and today we want to secure that service for the future by learning from past mistakes and moving forward for the benefit of all postmasters. We can and will restore pride in working for a business with a legacy of service rather than one of scandal. But the Communication Workers Union, CWU, called on the post office to halt the plans and for the government to intervene. CWU General Secretary Dave Ward said, for the company to announce the closure of hundreds of post offices, hot on the heels of the Horizon scandal, is as tone-deaf as it is immoral. CWU members are victims of the Horizon scandal, and for them to now fear for their jobs ahead of Christmas is yet another cruel attack. A spokesperson for the Department for Business and Trade said, Post offices are an integral part of the communities they serve and the services they provide for local people. The government is in active discussion with Nigel Railton on his plans to put postmasters at the centre of the organisation and strengthen the post office network for its long-term future. A public inquiry remains ongoing into the Horizon IT scandal, which involved hundreds of sub-postmasters who were wrongly convicted of stealing after the company's defective accounting system made it appear as though money was missing from their branches.
Recent wet weather has allowed an invasive species of plant to thrive across Oxfordshire. Japanese knotweed is native to East Asia and was introduced to the UK in the 1800s, where it has since spread out of control. It can grow up to 4 inches a day and forms dense thickets which can kill native plant species, making it particularly harmful to the Oxfordshire countryside. As we continue through a particular wet autumn, having already battled floods and record rainfall in the county, the threat of the Japanese knotweed looms. There have been well over 200 sightings across Oxfordshire, according to new data collected by invasive plant specialists in Environet. Oxford alone had 174 reported occurrences, while surrounding towns and villages were also affected, with 7 in Kidlington and 5 in Woodstock. In West Oxfordshire, Burford had 2 reported occurrences, Whitney had 1, Carterton had 2, and there were 3 close to Chipping Norton. Banbury had 17 occurrences that were reported, while Bicester had 13 and Wantage came in with 18. Between and including Didcot and Wallingford, there were 16 reported instances, while there were 14 occurrences in the area surrounding Abingdon. The plant is identified by distinctive red stems and bamboo-like appearance. It can grow up to 8 feet tall.
An Oxford University college is undergoing historic renovations ahead of its 700th anniversary. Oriel College is renewing its built heritage with its largest renovation programme in a century, ahead of the landmark anniversary in 2026. Founded in 1326 by King Edward II, Oriel College celebrates 700 years of uninterrupted existence the year after next. The renovation guarantees the built heritage of the college is a viable environment for learning and research in the future. Oriel's Provost and the Chair of Historic England, Lord Neil Mendoza, CBE, said, "Our beautiful built heritage has a positive influence on people's quality of life. We know this objectively, but I also see it every day in the experience and life of our students. The ongoing programme of renovation to prepare for Oriel's anniversary is historic in scale. The plan is to protect our buildings, but also optimise them to suit future needs. There is a tendency to think heritage buildings cannot be energy efficient, but that is wrong, and Oriel is leading the way. The first stage of the renovation programme consists of the renovation of historic spaces on the east range of First Quad. This is set to be complete in time for Oriel's anniversary year in 2026, while work to restore the 17th century dining hall was completed in 2021. Kitchens are being rebuilt and the bar refurbished at the college, while modifications are also being made to improve accessibility outcomes. Oriel's buildings and estate are beautiful and inspiring," said Treasurer Margaret Jones. "They are important not only for their impressive architecture, but also because of how they shape the experience of students. We have assessed which areas of our estate will require attention and are taking long-term steps to ensure Oriel's buildings are in excellent condition for future generations. I was delighted when the restoration of the dining hall won an award in 2021 from the Oxford Preservation Trust, recognising the contribution of the work to Oxford. Oriel is also working on proposals to decarbonise heating infrastructure, with a key priority ensuring buildings are accessible and energy efficient. In 2026, a project to restore and upgrade the senior library, situated on the first floor of the neoclassical building in Second Quad, is set to begin. The building was specially designed by architect James Wyatt in 1788 to house Oriel's rare books and manuscripts collection. The plan is to install environmental controls, security features, and new lighting, creating a functional rare books library for research. Oriel College is planning a full calendar of celebrations in 2026 to mark 700 years since the year of its foundation.
Oxford University has transformed a disused venue in the city centre into a free pop-up high-tech immersive experience. Torch, the Oxford Research Centre in the Humanities at the University of Oxford, has brought a so-called extended reality experience to Oxford. Between now and November the 24th, Fantasy Features, Guardians of Oxford, will showcase the latest innovations in motion tracking technologies and take visitors on a narrative journey through an alternative Oxford. Visitors will interact with a multi-sensory game-style environment guided by computer-generated gargoyle characters as they battle to protect the city from climate change. The project seeks to share the rich humanities research narratives of the University of Oxford with diverse, younger audiences through a free, family-friendly public offering open to all. By bringing to life a historic but currently empty city centre building, formerly home to NatWest Bank, the project aims to augment the cultural offer of the city and aspire to scale the project nationally and internationally to widen its impact and help address the decline of the High Street. Working with the Oxford Centre for Islamic Studies, the team at Torch has transferred the venue to offer a bespoke, unique experience for visitors as they pass from room to room on an interactive, game-like narrative journey. Fantasy Futures is an experiment in the technology based on the research of former director of Torch, Professor Wes Williams, and co-created with experts from the gaming and arts sectors. Professor Williams said, "The experience conjugates the visual exploration of hybrid human-animal creatures with place-based gaming narrative to create an innovative experiment in participatory research." Fantasy Futures focus on the often overlooked representations of hybrid creatures in Oxford's architectural heritage to bring to life for younger audiences the effects of climate change in the Anthropocene on the city's built environment. The experience uses motion tracking technologies provided by Vicon Motion Systems. Fantasy Futures is the result of an inspiring interdisciplinary collaboration with Creative Industries project partners Brian Mitchell, former head of Audio Motion Studios, and Ian Woolman, photographer and virtual content creator. Through this partnership, Torch has co-created a novel prototype experience with the aim of widening impact by both engaging the public in the research outcomes and delivering socio-economic benefits.
The lawyer, aiming to become Oxford University's first female chancellor, has spoken ahead of the final decision. Lady Elish Angiolini is a lawyer and academic, recognised for her contributions to justice reform and public service. She was the first woman to serve as both Solicitor General and Lord Advocate of Scotland, and currently serves as the Lord Clerk Register. She is currently Principal of St Hugh's College in Oxford, and is aiming to become the first female chancellor of the university. Oxford has a responsibility not only to lead in scholarship, but also to champion integrity, equity and empathy, said Lady Angiolini. As Chancellor, I would aim to foster an Oxford that inspires social change and supports the growth of ethical, progressive leaders. Lady Eilish says she sees her role as Chancellor not as a position to push a personal agenda, but as a stewardship role. She aims to create a supportive environment at Oxford where every voice from senior academics to students and staff is valued and celebrated. One main goal is to ensure that everyone feels heard and to serve as a committed partner to those dedicated to the university's future. The second round of voting will take place in the week commencing Monday, November the 18th. Following that, the successor to Lord Patton, Oxford's former Chancellor, who retired at the end of Trinity term 2024, will be announced in the week of Monday, November the 25th. The final five candidates also include the Right Honourable Dominic Grieve, Lord William Hague, Lord Peter Mandelson, and Baroness Jan Royal.
Family, friends, colleagues, and elite athletes gathered at Oxford Brookes University to celebrate the life and legacy of Keith Kelly. Mr. Kelly, who died in April after illness, served as Director of Sport at Oxford Brookes for more than 15 years, dedicating himself to the transformation and advancement of the university's sports programmes. During the event, held in the John Henry Brookes Building on Headington Campus, attendees shared their memories of Mr. Kelly, including his wife Jess, daughter Maya, son Lucas, and mother Paula, reflecting on the lasting impact he made on those around him. Mrs. Kelly said, "It was wonderful to see so many of Keith's colleagues and friends celebrating his legacy, as well as sharing the impact he had as a person." Oxford Brookes sport has been such a big part of his and our lives for such a long time. It is where Keith and I first met in 2009, and ever since we have had as family spent many happy times at the sports centre, professionally for him, but also personally for us all, playing or watching sports. We will always feel connected to the amazing sporting culture at Brookes and proud of what Keith did to shape and develop it over many years he was there. Under his leadership, Oxford Brookes University rose into the top 25% of British universities and colleges sport, BCUS, ranked institutions. He was especially passionate about elevating Oxford Brookes University Boat Club, OBUBC, to new heights, creating a programme known internationally for its excellence. His commitment to both men's and women's rowing fostered an environment where student athletes could excel on and off the water. Investment in women's rowing led to recent achievements, including Dutch national championship wins and podium finishes at the Koninklijke Holland Bekker Regatta in Amsterdam this June. Speaking at the event, Professor Alistair Fitt, Vice-Chancellor of Oxford Brookes University, said, "More than 7,500 students have represented the university in competition during Keith's time as Director of Sport. Some of these students went on to succeed at the very pinnacle of their sport. But Keith's vision has extended beyond competition. He championed participation in sport, not only for students, but also for staff and the local community, emphasising wellness, recreation and the enjoyment of being active. His commitment created a vibrant sports culture at Oxford Brookes, where everyone could find their place, whether they sought fun, fitness or the thrill of competition." Olympic and Paralympic medalists Rory Gibbs, Morgan Boulding, Tom Digby, Harry Brightmore, Ollie Wilkes, David Ambler, Matt Aldridge, Freddie Davidson and Frankie Allen attended, and new boats were named after each of them. The day ended with the BUCS Indoor Rowing Championships, where senior and novice rowers competed in a 2 kilometre rowing machine race.
Greg Lee has praised the work done so far by his national team boss, the former Oxford United player and coach Steve McLaren. Jamaica appointed McLaren as head coach at the end of July, having spent the previous 2 years as assistant to Erik ten Hag at Manchester United. He oversaw 2 wins and 2 draws in the CONCACAF Nations League group stage, ensuring progress to the quarter-finals, where Jamaica will come up against the United States in a 2-leg tie. The fixtures take place on Friday, 1 a.m. GMT, and Tuesday, 1 a.m. GMT. Lee said of McLaren, "He's been great. He's someone who has taken the job in his stride, and he's really excited to come in and manage the boys. He's spoken about how he's always seen the big potential with Jamaica, and I think we've made leaps and bounds in the way that we recruit, but also the quality and level of player that we're getting. He has good ideas on how he wants the team to play. It's difficult when you've only got 10 days, though, to try and impart all your wisdom on how we're going to play in possession and out of possession and change according to the teams that we're playing. It's difficult, and going away with teams like Jamaica poses its own challenges. He's finding that out on the way, but he's got very good energy and he's very knowledgeable. He gives the lads confidence and the license to play. I think he's doing a really good job so far, so I'm really excited to carry on with the team and see where we can get to." Discussing the key distinctions between league football in England and international football, Lee said, "It moves at a very different pace. It's almost slower to then quicker, if that makes sense. The back third and the middle third is a lot slower, but then the final third is very quick and very explosive. There are a lot of good players and a lot of good wingers. There is probably more time on the ball because it's a very quick pace in England and people are in your face constantly. There is probably more quality. If you switch off for a moment, any team at international level can hurt you." In September, Lee played the full 90 minutes in an unconventional right-back slot as Jamaica beat Honduras. Lee revealed it wasn't the first time he's been asked to play at right-back, though, doing so for Morecambe during the 2021-22 season. He said, "We ended up having a right-back injured, so I had to play right-back for the last 6 or 7 games. But when you're playing at international level, it's difficult. At the same time, it's a challenge and a test, and something you take in your stride. It was tough, but at the end of the day, we got the win, so it couldn't have been all that bad."
Blenheim Palace will undergo a major restoration project next year. The royal spot in Woodstock dates back to 1705, and its roof plan has been described as a monumental restoration. Costing £10.4 million, the project aims to preserve the architecture and safeguard the heritage of Blenheim Palace for generations to come. Every penny of visitor funds will contribute directly to this vital conservation effort, ensuring the project's completion by 2026. Heather Carter, Managing Director of Blenheim Palace, said, "This is a truly historic moment for Blenheim Palace and a chance for everyone to see it from a whole new perspective." The restoration project is not just about preserving our past, it's about creating new ways for visitors to engage with our history now and well into the future. "We're grateful for the continued support of our visitors, whose contributions are vital to the success of the initiative." Alongside the works, 3 exclusive new experiences at Blenheim Palace will be live at the landmark from spring 2025. For the first time, guests will get to go below the palace and step back in history to explore the hidden world of servants. Visitors will also be provided with breathtaking views from a viewing platform over the estate. Guests can also follow in the footsteps of dukes, duchesses and their illustrious guests by viewing private apartments and journeying through some of the grandest rooms. The decision to remove NHS beds from a care home has been condemned by county councillors. 7 NHS beds were removed from the Chilterns Court Care Centre in York Road, Henley, by Oxfordshire County Council without any consultation with local GPs, Henley Town Council or the local community, opponents have argued. The beds were used for short stay care for patients recovering from operations and who had been living independently. A Freedom of Information request confirmed these beds were funded by the Council, the Integrated Care Board, ICB, and the Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust, and are overseen by the Oxford University Hospital Hub Team. NHS beds are not supposed to be removed without consultation. Henley's independent councillor Stefan Gorajczyk put forward a motion calling the move unacceptable at a full county council meeting on Tuesday, November the 5th. He said, "Did Oxfordshire County Council consult or have conversations with stakeholders? No. Did Oxfordshire County Council tell GPs? No. Patient groups? Henley Town Council? No. They were removed without any consultation or conversations. The motion called for the Cabinet to reinstate the beds or provide a reason why they cannot and to carry out necessary consultations. As part of the Oxfordshire Way strategic vision, the Council aimed to prioritise care at home to reduce pressures on the NHS and care services. Speaking in support of the motion, Labour councillor Michael O'Connor said, "The council's general policy of encouraging care at home is working. However, in this specific case, there has clearly been deep frustration of the residents of Henley. As a result, I think we should vote for this motion to make sure that these voices are heard and that the people of Henley are included." The Executive Director of NHS Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire West, ICB, Daniel Levson, issued an apology for the removal of the beds. The Liberal Democrat leader of the council, Liz Leffman, said, "I think we would all agree that the Oxfordshire Way has been a huge success. I would far rather be in a home than in a hospital. But there was not a consultation, and I want to share Dan Levison's apology that this did not happen." Mr. Gavriesic said, "The Oxfordshire Way is very good and delivering cost-effective services, but you always have to have some beds that are available. Patients should go home with a really good care package. A proper conversation would give precise figures." The council voted unanimously in favour of the motion, which could be fully approved by the cabinet in due course.
A community pub in an Oxfordshire village has reopened following the arrival of new tenants. The Red Lion in Northmoor, West Oxfordshire, closed at the end of March when long-serving tenants Lisa and Ian Neal moved on. Now it has reopened, following the arrival of Deb and Toby Meriden, who have been running the Six Bells in Kidlington. The 17th century pub was bought from brewery giant Green King by the local community in 2014, after villagers raised tens of thousands of pounds to secure its future. Northmoor Lion, the community group running the pub, took the opportunity to carry out extensive renovations before the new tenants arrived for the opening on November the 1st. Real ales available on the opening night were Abingdon Bridge and Gunner's Gold from Loose Cannon in Abingdon, White Knight from Goffs of Cheltenham, and Tribute from St Austell in Cornwall. Graham Shelton, chairman of the community group, said, "What a joy to see customers standing shoulder to shoulder again in the bar of the Red Lion Northmoor. After a long wait, thirsts were keen, and this lovely little community-owned pub out in the wilds of West Oxfordshire did not disappoint. New landlords Toby and Deb Meriden were kept hard at it, pulling pints in this long-standing shrine to good beer. Mr. Meriden, whose family continues to run the Six Bells in Kidlington, said, "We are keen always to have a good selection of local cask ales on tap, as well as the occasional guest from further afield. We've done a complete revamp of the cellar to bring the pipework and temperature control up to date, so this informal opening has been a great way to iron out any issues. We want to make sure, too, that the Red Lion is a proper pub with good pub grub readily available, and we will be launching our food offering as soon as we've sorted out a few practical things in the kitchen. Mr. Meriden and his partner have plans for quiz nights, bar games, bingo, and possibly piano party nights." Mr. Shelton added, "Do come along and enjoy the fun. The shepherd's huts in the garden are clean, warm and welcoming, so there's no need to rush home, especially now that Toby will be supplying a cooked breakfast to start the day."
From Memory Lane, 1983. With flags flying and in their immaculate uniform, the marching men and women made an impressive sight. Members of the Royal British Legion at Ensham near Witney turned out in their full regalia to mark their 60th anniversary in 1983. Hundreds of villagers and their relatives and friends were there to admire not only the uniformed contingent, but other groups as well. The Diamond Jubilee celebration also drew support from guides, scouts, cadets and local voluntary groups. The Duke of Marlborough was among the guests. After the parade, an anniversary service was held in St Leonard's Church, Ensham, conducted by the vicar, the Reverend Peter Ridley.
And that was the last item for this week. Please note there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Ox Talk edition. Please ring 07496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.